Welcome to From Betrayal to Breakthrough. I'm Dr. Debbie Silber, and today's guest is Ken Giedros. Ken is an award-winning memoirist. His memoir, Letters to My Son in Prison, won 2023 Nonfiction Book of the Year from American Writing Awards. In this book, he bares his soul about the parenting challenges he faced, how he held on to his 35-year marriage, and, having been a pastor, how he weathered a dramatic crisis of faith. The book is honest, insightful, and redemptive. So today you're going to hear about a different type of betrayal. What happens when you have a crisis of faith, when life as you've known it is completely upended and your entire family implodes? Yep, that's what happens with betrayal. But you're about to meet Ken, who faced his own unique reckoning after an experience with one of his sons that completely shattered his faith. You're going to love this conversation. Here we go. Okay, everybody, we are with Ken Giedros today, and this is a very different type of story. It is a different type of betrayal, but wait till you hear this. I have a feeling, I purposely didn't want to spend too much time with him before I hit record because I wanted to hear it just as you are. So we're going to hear, we're really talking about breaking through after a crisis of faith. Welcome, Ken.
Thank you. Great to be with you.
Oh, great. So let's just start with the story.
Well, I used to be a pastor back in the day as part of my professional life. And I was so after college and then was asked to go back in the ministry when three of my sons were just hitting adolescence, which was its own challenge. I didn't realize how much of a challenge that would be, but it turned out to be a hellacious challenge through those years. And then my sons, kind of our family just kind of imploded, to be real honest with you. I resigned the ministry, not in shame, but maybe lowercase shame, maybe lowercase s. just skedaddled out of there. And it was a very, very challenging 10 years. And then it kind of was punctuated with my middle son actually killing a man when he was high on heroin. He was driving and he rear-ended a cyclist. And so, you know, that just kind of felt like this massive punctuation mark, really. And he went to jail, went to prison, got a 10-year sentence. I ended up writing a book about it. He's been out now for 5 years, is doing great now. But of course, that was tragic. A man lost his life, a widow was made. And it was just tragedy upon tragedy. And so, you know, for me, the betrayal felt certainly as a parent, because I had really tried to do it well, tried to do it right, had a spiritual focus, you know, and just, I have other thoughts about that, but I did the best I could. Oddly though, the most challenging thing for me to overcome was I almost hesitate to say this because it sounds whiny, but the betrayal I felt from God. Mm. And I'm going to define, you know, I know betrayal is, you've defined it very well, but for me, it felt like after all I did, after leaving a career that, you know, was going fantastic, going back in the ministry, sacrificing like I had, to then have not just challenges in my family, but a literal implosion of my family. All three of my sons struggled, you know?
Yeah, and I want to stop you there because I know so many of our viewers and listeners are saying, when you say your family imploded, what exactly do you mean?
I mean, two of them struggled with opioids significantly. One, of course, went to jail, and then another struggled with substances as well. And, you know, I'm talking 5-7 years, wow. You know, so at one point for about a 4-year period, all three of my sons were completely lost, right? So I've poured 20 some years into trying to build a family that, and again, for no visibility, no accolades, only just to be a dad, right? Just to be a family. And then to have it go so south was just tough. And I mean, it got so bad for me, you know, I just couldn't even pray. I couldn't read my Bible. I didn't curse God, you know, I didn't curse him, but it was just flatline. I mean, it was just, there was nothing there. I didn't even know what to do with my family or with God or anything else. So it just felt like betrayal to me.
And it's such a, I mean, as you know, as parents, I know I have four kids. I mean, all we want is for them to be healthy and happy and sort of well-balanced. And I know when anything goes south, our immediate thought is, what did I do? I mean, I know that's yes. my way. And yeah. So what did you make of that? I mean, I can't even imagine. What thoughts were going through you besides the betrayal you felt from God? What were you thinking? What else were you thinking?
I was trying to think what you just mentioned. What did we do wrong? Where did we falter? And secondly, where did I go wrong with God? And did I, you know, there's a little bit of the guilt. I was raised Catholic, and of course had a good old Catholic guilt there. And, you know, you just like, okay, how did this happen? And this is odd, but it's true. I didn't find clarity until I wrote a book about it. I was kind of walking around like a zombie in this area. I was, you know, I do a lot professionally and otherwise with friends, et cetera. But in these two areas, I was a zombie. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I started writing the book and talking to my sons, they've all recovered beautifully. We are super close with them and their wives. We play pickleball every Sunday afternoon. You know, we just have this amazing time. So it's incredible. It's as good now as it was bad back then, mm-hmm. if you can believe that. As bad as it was is how good it is. But I needed clarity. And so I really talked a lot, especially with my oldest son. You know, just, okay, so, and I would start writing scenes about what happened when they were teens and what I did and how they responded, how it felt to have a minister as a dad with that kind of profile and that kind of pressure on my son. And I started realizing, okay, I didn't realize that my sons felt this way. I didn't realize these were the dynamics. I kind of knew them, but I didn't realize them. So that's the parenting. Those were the parenting layers of the onion that were peeled off as I started to gain real clarity. And I can tell you later what I feel like I learned.
Yeah. And you know, it's so interesting. And I just want to stop you there. It's so interesting when you say it's as good now as it was bad back then. That's that perspective that you can only have when you've been through trauma. And that's the opportunity. And I know people think I'm crazy. Opportunity? Yes. Because otherwise you're just sort of the recipient of the trauma and you're just stuck. But when you use it as a launch pad for transformation, that's where those insights come from. That's where that new level of closeness comes from. It's only because you faced it, felt it, moved through it. That's the only way.
Yes, I agree. And I think it's good for someone to hear that who's in the middle of it. Although I do think it's still hard to hear. I think if you had said that to me in that 4-year period, I would have smiled and nodded courteously, but you know, inside I'd be like, yeah, but you don't know. You don't know my situation. And again, it's true. Every person is an individual. I'm sure in your coaching, you see that. Everyone just has a unique angle. But there was maybe a sliver, maybe a very tiny part of me that knew things. Now, you know what? For many years, there wasn't any sliver.
I'm not being honest here, Ken.
I'll be honest. And I'm not talking 1 year, you know, talking for quite a few years. The truth be told, I did get some slivers and, you know, the little things happened, even as my son was serving his prison term. You know, there were some beautiful, elegant, gorgeous father things, son things that happened that were awesome. And even with God, you know, I do a weekly essay and I just wrote about this last week. You know, there were slivers. There was a moment I used to go to this. I didn't go to church for a long time, just maybe 10 years. I just couldn't. I was like, why would I go to a place that makes me feel horrible? Yeah. Right? Like, why would I expose myself to that?
And you know what's so interesting? There are so many people that I have come across, and even in my own study, it was so clear that there was this movement towards spirituality, whether it was the spiritual side of your religion. Some people abandon religion completely. That trauma had them questioning their faith. And it was only through the spiritual side of it were they able to kind of reconcile with whatever.
Oh, that's interesting.
God, the universe, source, you know, energy, whatever, meant to them. Was that, something that you experienced?
That's fascinating that you put it that way. I've never put it that way, but that is interesting. Because, yeah, in fact, that is exactly what happened with me.
Yeah.
So the only church I could go to, let me just tell you how bad it was. During the sermon of this church, I would leave, go to my car, and do some reading. While he's preaching, I just couldn't even hear preaching. I was like, it made me crazy to hear some guy up there pontificating about how God will bless your family. Right? Sure. Anyway, but the music and the darkness. So they turned the lights of the church down, and they turned the lights on the band down. So there was no light. And you're right. I had a spiritual lowercase s experience with the music, with the bass. It was in Hollywood. It was this great band. I mean, incredible band, Mumford and Sons-ish. You know, with a spirit, with a Christian tone. It was really cool. And I would just cry. I mean, I have never cried so much in my life. I started bringing Kleenex. They actually provided Kleenex there because they knew, you know, the music just moved you. And you're right. It was a spiritual experience that kind of was a bridge. That's what it was. Mm-hmm. It was a bridge back to God, but not all the trappings of God, not all the religion around God. It was just uppercase G, universe God. That's what brought me. And after that one experience, I started having more, and, you know, it kind of like was the, like I said, the bridge. So that's a good insight, Debbie. Good job.
Well, that's what happens when you read 250 studies and do this work for a living. So
I hear you.
Bring me back to that time when your son was in prison. How did you connect with him, and what was that like?
It was tenuous. It was touch and go. It was, you know, he felt bad, horrible for what he did. He felt horrible for making a widow. He felt horrible for disappointing me as his dad. You can imagine 10 years of opioid addiction. There's so much ugly water under that bridge that it's painful. About 4, 5, 6 weeks after he was taken to LA County Jail, we had this incredible moment. Normally in this visiting room, there's six booths, and you get phones and you talk through glass, and the room's full with other inmates and their families. This time it was just me and him. And it was my first visit with him alone, just me and him. He came in a little red-faced. I was like, okay, what's going on? He just looked different. He was completely sober now. And I hadn't seen a sober son in at least 10 years, almost like you've lost your son. And the boy that you know, is someone foreign. And now you finally see him. It's like this transcendent moment. And about 10 minutes into our visit, he completely melts down. He completely breaks down, starts weeping, wailing. I thought the guard was going to come in. He mentions the word of the victim, Rod. He says, I'm so sad I killed Rod. And I mean, you got to know, to a son who's shirked responsibility for all those years, to say, I'm so sorry I killed. And then he gives us the name, Rod. It just hit me. He says, I'm so sorry I made Valerie a widow. And Dad, I'm so sorry for the life I've lived. And that was, I'm getting more choked up now than I did then. Because to be honest, I didn't get choked up then. I was like, this is needed. Yeah. This is needed. So that was the beginning. We started writing each other letters, these amazing, just honest letters. You know, he had nothing but time on his hands. I wanted to connect with my son. So I just started, you know, after a while, I just started opening up my life. Mm. Like, I even told him how I met his mother and all the dating stuff. You know, like, I just, and I was like, he's going to read it. Hey, he can burn the letter.
Right.
But it bonded us in this just incredible way.
Oh, so beautiful. It was beautiful. And you know what? It sounds like he had that dark night of the soul. And it's when we crash and burn, that's when we're able to pick ourselves up because it can't get worse, right? And we pick ourselves up.
Yeah.
And that's that second chance. And that's when we create something beautiful. And people ask me all the time, they said, can you really change after betrayal? Is it possible? Whatever the betrayal is. And in your case, it's a different type, but still. And it's 100% true and real. When someone realizes they blew up someone else's life, they shattered the heart and trust of the person they loved the most, or they just, the rug had been completely pulled out from someone, whatever it is. That reckoning allows for the birth of the new. And it sounds like that's what happened with him. And that's when on that, you know, when we hear about the hero's journey, the hero sort of, you know, moving along, and then there's that crisis, but then here's the opportunity. Then there's that climb, and they climb way farther and further than if that experience never happened at all. Tell me what this, because you mentioned your wife, how you met. What did this do to your marriage?
It was traumatic. It was very challenging. As a couple, when you have sons struggle like ours did, you can turn on each other. It's easy. She's an enabler. I'm an asshole. You know, whatever. Well, that's true. I am an asshole. But anyway, you know, you're cold or whatever. You're too strict. You know, we had those talks and we had those arguments. You know, when the accident happened and jail happened, that was tough. I'll never forget being in the courtroom, and I'm ashamed to say this, but you know, there was even times we couldn't even sit together. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know that's not something I'm proud of. I just could. It was mostly me. I just was so nervous. I just was walking and just could. I wasn't gracious to my other two sons in the courtroom. I wasn't gracious to my friends. I mean, I'm embarrassed, but it was, I just was so broken, I guess is the right word. I just was so betrayed and I just didn't know what to do. And so, you know, but we hung in there, we talked, we would get together, you know, every night, watch a little Grey's Anatomy, you know, pause the DVR, you know, in our shows, and we would talk, the room would be dark. And you know, we're 41 years in now. So, you know, we're not newcomers to this. And we just talked, we kept it real. It's funny, a dark room sometimes can help you be more honest with each other. Yeah, it's weird. And it's funny. I just love the dark. I'm Phantom of the Opera is what I am. I like a dark church. I like a dark room to talk to my wife. We're seeing a theme here, Debbie.
I see it. Well, no, you know what?
Prince of Darkness.
It's real because that level of vulnerability is so uncomfortable, but in the dark, you know, it's almost like I used to remember having the best conversations with my kids when we were driving, because they'd be, let's say, in the back seat. They're not looking directly at me. So they felt comfortable sharing. And that's when I knew if I needed to talk to them, get them in the car.
My gosh, that's so awesome. And I even think in marriage sometimes, you know, if it's hard, I don't know, you know, if I sit down, I'm opposite the table with my wife, I don't know, I'm looking at her, sometimes it's weird, not weird, that's not weird, but yeah. I don't know, the darkness sometimes, or driving, you're right, or walking, mm-hmm. can really, the scenery's passing and your mind kind of relaxes, and
yes.
Somehow, for some reason, those were our best talks. And we, you know, there was a time when we couldn't even visit our son in prison together. We would talk over each other. I annoyed her. She annoyed me. She'd want to just comfort him. I'd want to, you know, keep it real with him until keeping it real went wrong. And, you know, it was just, I guess I'm not proud of this, but I find in 41 years of marriage, giving each other enough space, not too much, but enough space can be a magical thing. I need space. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm 64 now. I've got my things I like to do, right? Joyce has her things. And, you know, we don't have to shop together. We don't have to work out together. We don't have to do 1,000 things together. Mm-hmm. We've got something that works for us. And this trauma helped us refine what that was.
Was there a moment? Was there a turning point? You know, sometimes people can remember. I mean, let's say if it's a betrayal, it could be D-Day, Discovery Day, or it could just be that one moment where you realized we're on the upside of this. You know, was there a moment that you can think of where you were like, okay, we're okay, we're going to be okay?
I do. There was a letter I got from Lucas probably 2 years in, where he had just finished Crime and Punishment by Dostoevsky. My son went on a reading binge for about a year and just changed his life in prison. He was he worked in the library. They paid him 8 cents an hour. but he devoured books like you would not believe and literally changed his life. It was his salvation. But he wrote me a letter and he just said, you know, I just finished the book and I had to push myself through it because it was dense, but I realized that, like Dostoevsky, who the character, I mean, had killed somebody and got sentenced to 10 years. I'm like that character and I'm being born again. I'm seeing things new. I put the book on my chest. All that my roommates were asleep. It was 10 o'clock at night. And, you know, and he just writes this most elegant, beautiful, changed man letter to me. And I'm just weeping, reading it. And that was, it may seem far into it, but that was kind of the first time I said, you know what? Maybe, just maybe, my son will be a human again. Maybe we'll be a father and son again. So that was far in, but that was probably the first time I tangibly remember thinking, I think there's hope.
Yeah. Now, was there a moment with your other sons where something sort of shifted in them, or they were impacted by all this too?
You know, my youngest son struggled with opioids at the time, and no, this did not move the needle for him. He had to come to his own rock bottom. My other son had already turned his life around, thankfully. At least I had one ray of hope. He had a son right when my middle son went to prison. My oldest son had a son. So things were turning around for him. And really, there was no tangible moment of truth with either of them. They just gradually changed.
Yeah. How do you look at life now?
You know, I think maybe the one word that I love now and that characterizes my life, and this kind of sounds self-serving, I'm going to say it anyway, is humility. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to put it this way. I've been humbled. Mm-hmm. I have been humbled in life. I used to think I was all that as a parent, as a pastor, as a, you know, and again, I wasn't. Not like I just, you know, you're confident. Mm-hmm. You're confident in your soul. You're like, yeah, you know, I'm something. I don't know. That's been kind of like knocked out of me. And again, I think I'm something. I love my life. I love my faith. I have an incredible relationship with my sons, even my middle son still, which we keep it real. I talked to him. You know, the other day he was being a bit of an asshole, just kind of arrogant with his mom and throwing his own son around. Like, I was like, I called him up later. I said, look, you're losing the humility that changed your life. And he was like, he got it. He goes, Dad, you can say that to me anytime. I am forever an open slate to you. Yeah. I'm like, are you freaking kidding me? Wow. I love this.
You know,
but I feel humble, Debbie. You know, I have been to what I feel like is the bottom. And again, I realize there may be a lower bottom. Not saying that there isn't. Mm-hmm. All I know is I've been to a very dark place.
Yeah.
And I stayed there. I wallowed in it. I struggled with it. I felt all alone in it.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget that place.
Yeah.
I will never forget that. And there's this infusion of humility. I think humility may be one of the greatest virtues. I almost feel like it's the gateway virtue.
Yeah.
Is when you have either been humbled Or maybe if you're a better person than me, you humbled yourself, okay? When you are that person, there's this light that shines from you. There is this realness, this gentleness. Even if you're an asshole on the inside, which I struggle with, you know, by the time it reaches your lips,
yeah,
it's been filtered through humility and it becomes gracious instead of what you really wanted to say. And I don't know, I look at it in my marriage. My wife has it. And even though we'll sometimes, you know, we'll get a little bit weird with each other, but it's like that humility just comes in and says, you know what? Just humble out. And so that's kind of how life feels for me.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. And Ken, I'm convinced your biggest crisis reveals your greatest gift. And if you think about it, if humility is what has emerged in you and you get to share that and teach that to your family and all within your care and reach, you ask me, that's trauma well served. What do you want everyone? Yep. What do you want everyone to know as we wrap up?
Well, I think I've kind of said it all. It's a, you know, of course, the book's a beautiful story about a father and son coming back together again. Well, I guess one last thing was, and I'm not sure how this segues into kind of what you teach, but it was through the letter writing, me trying to help my son, that helped me. Mm-hmm. And I didn't expect that, right? I'm the dad. I'm guiding him. We start reading C.S. Lewis together. We do all these things. But it was through that that all of a sudden it started ministering and it started benefiting me. And, you know, that's, I don't know, I guess I, even maybe I, even in our trauma, sometimes even in our lower moments, if we can maybe try to help someone else, I don't know, there's a lesson in there somewhere.
There absolutely is. Yeah.
Yeah. I think two things, you know, so I write about that in the book. I do a weekly essay on Substack. If somebody's interested in hearing my angle on the world, it's kind of me just exploring life on this side of trauma and this side of betrayal. And it's a pretty beautiful thing.
You know what? I love so much about what you shared. And there's this beauty and this depth and this richness that we only get to when we move through the you know, what other people would think is unimaginable. We don't know how strong we are. We don't know how resilient we are. We don't know how capable we are. We don't know how much love we can have and how much love we can give. And I think you saw that in moving through your own experience. Ken, where can we go to learn more about you and all your great stuff?
KenGuidros.com. So myname.com. And that's where everything is.
Beautiful. And I will have everything in the show notes so all of our listeners and viewers can enjoy it. I want to thank you so much for sharing your story, for moving through your own darkness and benefiting so many people because of it. Thank you.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Whether you're a parent or caretaker for someone you care about, it's so painful to see them hurting or causing hurt to others. But it's through those hard times that we have an opportunity to wake up, become someone new, and that's what Ken and his family all did. Stay in touch with Ken by going to kenguidros.com, and we'll have all of his information in the show notes at thepbtinstitute.com/podcast. Here's my biggest takeaway: humility. Every trauma gives us the opportunity to learn something new as we're tested, pushed, and given the opportunity to become someone we weren't before the trauma happened. For Ken, his experience led him to discover humility, and what a beautiful gift that is. Your biggest crisis always reveals your greatest gift, although sometimes it can take all we have to find it. I hope it inspires you to become stronger, healthier, wiser, or whatever is lying beneath your pain, because it's there. If we can help you, join us within the PBT Institute, where all we do all day, every day, is help you move through the proven and predictable 5 stages from betrayal to breakthrough. And if you're the betrayer, we got you covered too with our Rebuild program. Reclaim is for the betrayed, Rebuild is for the betrayer, and you can learn more about all of our programs at thepbtinstitute.com. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to be with you next time, and here's to your breakthrough.